Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
This is a special edition of the Global News Podcast. We will bring you what we know so far about the huge double earthquakes in southern Turkey and northern Syria.
There are people still trapped under rubble. May God give us a speedy recovery.
The quake was very severe, very scary. It took almost 2 minutes until the shaking stopped.
Many hundreds of people have died, we know that, and we will have news of the efforts to find survivors.
They are listening to the rubble, and if they can hear a rescue call, then they are digging into that area, but it needs bare hands. You know, you can't do it with machinery.
Hello, I am Nick Miles. Events are moving very fast, and this information is correct at 12 noon GMT on Monday the 6th of February. Well, at this stage, the devastation is impossible to quantify. For now, we know that more than 1,500 people have died, but that number is inevitably going to rise. Many thousands more have thought to be injured. The 7.8 magnitude quake struck just before dawn, followed by a number of aftershocks, and then came a second quake, almost as forceful as the first. The epicentre of the dawn quake was in the Turkish province of Gaziantep, and these men described the situation in the city of Diyarbakir, further east.
There are people still trapped under rubble. I have a friend living in this apartment. His children were rescued from the top floor, but his daughter broke an arm. We'll see what happened to those living on the ground floors. May God give us a speedy recovery.
I was sleeping when my wife suddenly woke me up. The quake was very severe, very scary. We were hearing sounds from all over the place. It took almost 2 minutes until the shaking stopped.
Well, those two men were standing in front of a 10-storey apartment block that had collapsed earlier. Diggers are trying to clear some of the rubble away. And we're seeing live pictures of people trying to help with their bare hands to try to free anyone that might be trapped. İlknur Çevik, advisor to Turkey's president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, told the BBC this is the best way to find survivors.
Whoever is under, they are listening to the rubble, and if they can hear a rescue call, then they are digging into that area, but it needs bare hands. You know, you can't do it with machinery. So all the well-trained teams are there trying to get to the victims.
Would you like teams to come from outside Turkey as well?
Yes. Azerbaijan has already sent a group of 400 earthquake experts and rescue workers. So Turkey is, as you know, an earthquake zone. So we have mobilized all our earthquake rescue teams. Incidences like this, you need a lot of people in so many places. You need sniffer dogs and you need all these. And we do have them. Turkey is very well equipped in that area. The problem is, of course, concentrating your forces quickly and in so many places. That is one the problem. There are 10 provinces, as I said. They're very vast. They're southeastern Turkey, practically.
Well, many of the dead are in war-torn northern Syria, with dozens of fatalities reported in rebel-held areas. The region is home to millions of Syrian refugees living in camps on both sides of the border. Ismail Abdallah is a spokesman for the Syrian White Helmets rescue group that operates in rebel-held areas of the country. He is in Sarmada in Syria, near the border with Turkey.
I felt the earthquake. I was sleeping beside me. There were my daughters, three daughters, and I felt the earthquake. The house was shaking, and I survived, but my neighbors didn't survive. Just a few meters from my house, there 15 people were killed. Up to now, the teams are trying to save them and retrieve them from the building. And then I moved to to other buildings. I saw 5 buildings beside each other collapsed, and the team working and to save the people. They were able to save a mother and her child. I saw this by my eyes. Then still we have missing tens of people under the buildings, collapsed buildings. As you see, and all the world, you need to know this, the situation here is bigger than the White Helmets. It's bigger than any organization in Northwest Syria. That's why we're calling the international community to help us in this situation, to handle this, to provide support, to provide medical care for those who injured, for those who lost their houses, lost their buildings. Now they need shelter.
Ismail Al-Abdullah from the White Helmets. Well, access to the area is obviously very tricky indeed. Our reporter Lina Sinjab is monitoring developments from Beirut in Lebanon.
We're already overwhelmed with, you know, disastrous news coming from both Turkey and northern Syria about the aftermath of the first earthquake that took place in the early hours of the morning. The situation in Turkey is far more advanced in the sense that it's a country, it's prone to earthquake. It's an earthquake zone, so they are prepared. They have, you know, their infrastructure, their system in place, yet they're calling for international help to come in the to help in the rescue operation. But northern Syria is really disastrous. So this is an area held by opposition. It was subject to bombardment from the regime and Russian warplane over a decade, destroyed its infrastructure, destroyed the health system and facilities. And what is left now is just really basic hospitals and health facilities that are built and supported by Syrian experts and some local NGOs who were trained for the job, but they're not trained for such a massive scale of a natural disaster. It's the first of its kind to hit the country, and they feel that they're left alone, you know, with hundreds of, you know, death and, you know, thousands still missing or injured. So it's not clear so far when actually international aid is coming to Turkey and if any of that is going to cross the border into Syria to help with the rescue operation there.
Lina, I've seen pictures of some of the White Helmet rescuers using metal cutters to try to cut through some of the reinforced concrete that has collapsed on people. They do have, from the evidence that we've seen, a modicum of rescue equipment. But from what you're saying, they need more. But how is that going to come in? From which side is it going to come in? It'd be very difficult, won't it?
Well, it's certainly not coming from the government side because they see them as a terrorist organization. They see all the north that is under opposition control as rebellious against the country. So they will not extend any help from the government side. If any help is going to come, it's more likely to come through the Turkish side inside Syria. Of course, the White Helmet has been trained over the year for rescue operation because of the barrel bombs. Because of the warplane bombardment to Syria, they were trained to rescue civilians from under the rubble. So they have this training capacity. They have the minimum or basic equipment for the search on the rubbles, but that's enough. Not enough at all when it comes to big scale of an earthquake that happened today and that's unprecedented in the region.
Of course, it's not just in the rebel-held areas of Syria where this earthquake, the first one particularly, was felt. President Assad has had a press conference and he's saying, look, that there have been widespread devastation and loss of life in other parts of Syria as well.
Certainly in cities like Latakia, like Hama, and mostly in Aleppo as well, which is the closest to that Turkish side of the border. You know, even hours after the earthquake, we've seen footage of buildings collapsing already, you know, and these are also areas that lived like, especially in Aleppo, long years of the war and damages. So this is still ongoing. But I have to say, if you look at the map and you see the part of Syria that is closest to the province of Gaziantep, are the ones who are under the opposition control, and these are the ones that are most hit hard and with the least capacity to support. You know, the Syrian government still has its infrastructure to a certain extent. They have their medical facilities, they have their Red Crescent that is operating, you know, fast and large in large scale. While this does not exist on the other side, or even if it exists, but it's really on a lower scale that cannot meet the demand of such a natural disaster.
That was Lina Sinjab. Well, about 8 hours or so after the first quake in Turkey and Syria, a second one struck. Well, Emre Temel in Istanbul told us more about it.
Nick, a second massive earthquake hit Turkey almost an hour ago. Its center was in southern province of Kahramanmaraş again, Turkey's Disaster and Emergency Management Authority announced its magnitude as 7.6 and emphasized that it's a new earthquake, not an aftershock. However, we still don't know whether it caused further casualties or damages or not. The first quake was centered in Pazarcık district of Kahramanmaraş province and struck at 4:17 a.m. local time. The magnitude of the first quake was announced at 7.4 first, then revised at 7.7, and it is the second biggest earthquake in Turkey's history.
Was Emre Temel in Istanbul. There are many political obstacles in this region that could hamper efforts to rescue people hit by the quakes, as I heard from our diplomatic correspondent, James Landau.
It's more complicated in Syria, obviously, than in Turkey. Northwestern Syria is a hugely complicated part of the world. There are parts of the territory there that are controlled by the Syrian government, other areas held by rebels, patchworks of militias. There's a logistical problem of getting aid onto the ground in an already complicated situation. The latest UN figures show that in that part of Syria, which has been gripped by war and civil conflict for, you know, over 11 years now, there are 3.3 million people who are food insecure, 1.8 million who are living in refugee camps, and there are almost 3 million people who are internally displaced already. So if you add onto that the consequences of this extraordinary earthquake, you have an astonishingly complex humanitarian situation, regardless of the politics of getting through checkpoints and organising the, you know, the airports and things like that.
And looking at Turkey, obviously that this part of Turkey is a Kurdish-dominated area. There's widespread and long-lasting enmity and conflict in that part of the country. That's going to add a degree of tension and, I suppose, distrust between the local population and any government attempts to bring in aid, I would have thought.
I think it will complicate things. It won't prevent them. It won't stop them. I think the moment it's going to be about what kit and support do you need where? Which airport are you going to go to? Who's going to be in charge of dealing with the controls? You'll have these small little airports that will not be used to the flow of constant transports from overseas, bringing in aid. Who's organising that? Where's it going to go? Is it the right kit going to the right place? It's as complicated as dealing with rivalries between local officials and national officials, who's in charge of which area. That will always play a role. And then in this part of the world, it is more complex than most. But the logistics are as important as the politics.
Absolutely. Paul Moss is back in the studio with us. You were saying earlier on, Paul, that some of the airports are closed as well.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Before politics, the sheer fact of having an airport at all. Gaziantep Airport closed. Another regional airport nearby closed. This makes the whole thing, yes, absolutely difficult. I should say that the offers of assistance are piling in now. Germany offering emergency shelters and water treatment units. We have a major humanitarian crisis looming. India sending 100 people with dogs and equipment to search for survivors, a country which obviously has its own experience of earthquakes and will know what to do. Poland, 76 firefighters and dogs on their way. Taiwan, and perhaps more surprisingly, Ukraine has offered to provide assistance, a country which is in rather need of assistance itself at the moment. But there's a political thing going on there. I think Ukraine and Russia both anxious to keep in with Mr. Erdogan.
Paul Moss, and before him, James Landale. That's it for now, but we'll have much more on this story in our next regular edition of the Global News Podcast. I'm Nick Miles. Thanks for listening.